Now you know why I said kicking ass. I want to apologize to anyone whose sensibilities were offended by me saying that I grew up as a Hindu, and as a Hindu, I know God as a creator, a nurturer, and a destroyer. And in her sanctuary, I think it's okay to say kicking ass. And many of us read the article in Washington Post yesterday that Jyoti referred to, like, but why us? We are ending poverty. It also said that it has 11,300 employees, and I think very well, we know very well whose poverty is being ended here. If you start looking at the salaries and the rest, at the cost of the poor and the third world people. Our next speaker is Daphne Wysham, who coordinates the Sustainable Energy and Economy Network, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies and the Transnational Institute in Amsterdam. Born and raised in India, Daphne's current research and activism is focused on equity and sustainability as it relates to international financial institutions and export credit agencies, multinational corporations, fossil fuels, indigenous people, human rights, and climate change. She's a former editor-in-chief of Greenpeace magazine. She's the co-editor of a book on the 50th anniversary of the World Bank called Beyond Bretton Woods, Alternatives to the Global Economic Order with IPS Director John Kavanagh. Her articles and research have been featured in the New York Times, on CNN, NPR, and Pacifica, in San Jose Mercury News, Knight Ridder Wire, In the Nation, Ecologist, and The Guardian, among many others. So, Daphne.
Good morning. It's a great honor to stand before you here during one of the most important movements of our lives, the movement for global social and environmental justice. I want to tell you today about one of the World Bank's largest areas of lending activity, one that has a significant impact both on present and future generations. It's lending in support of oil, gas, and coal mining around the world. As you probably know, burning fossil fuels is already affecting the stability of our climate. Climate change, as it has been said, is second only to global nuclear war in the threat it poses to the global ecosystems, and the poorest in developing countries are at greatest risk. We only need to read the papers to see the death sentence weather-related disasters are imposing right now on the poorest around the world. Today, it's Ethiopia, where a three-year drought means the last source of nutrition for children, camel's milk, has dried up along with the land, resulting in hundreds of infant deaths. We've seen images in our morning papers of women and children in Mozambique and other parts of southern Africa holding on to fragile treetops and rooftops as the floodwaters rise. Then there's the storms and flooding of Hurricane Mitch that ravaged Central American countries within the last few years. And we here in the U.S. complain that our oil prices are rising by a few cents. But the price of our fossil fuel consumption is being paid right now in lost lives by the poorest people around the world. This is a form of ecological debt of the worst kind that we owe the Global South. The time that we live in... The time that we live in is a critical time in many ways. In climate terms, we have a small window of opportunity to either invest in clean, renewable forms of energy and energy efficiency in developing countries where the energy infrastructure has not yet been built, or we commit ourselves as a planet to an even more rapidly warming globe. The World Bank knows this. They know it very well. They also know that the poorest are at greatest risk of starvation, disease, and death as the planet warms. So what are they doing about it? Well, at IPS, we did a study. We analyzed World Bank energy lending over a six-year period, beginning at the Earth Summit of 1992 and continuing through 1998. What we discovered was the following. Between 92 and 1998, the World Bank has invested over $14 billion in oil, gas, and coal projects around the world. These same projects, financed only over a six-year period, will release greenhouse gas emissions over their lifetimes that are more than all current global greenhouse gas emissions for all of the world's countries for one year. One in three of these fossil fuel projects is powering dirty coal-fired power plants in China. Within the World Bank's energy and power lending, three-quarters of its money, 76%, is devoted to fossil fuels. The bank is now investing roughly 25 times as much on fossil fuels as it is on renewables and energy efficiency. And not surprisingly, 9 out of 10 of these projects benefit corporations based in the powerful G7 countries. Corporations like ExxonMobil, Amoco, Shell, and BP. I'd like to tell you just about two projects in particular that are exemplary of the World Bank's fossil fuel lending. One is the Chad Cameroon Pipeline Project, a project that is going to be coming to the World Bank's board of directors very soon, probably in the next couple of weeks. This project will partner a $540 million World Bank loan package with some of the largest corporations on the planet, including ExxonMobil, Chevron Corporation, and Petronas, and two of the most corrupt governments in the world. ExxonMobil is one of the corporations most adamantly opposed to any action by the U.S. on climate change. Exxon CEO Lee Raymond warned China a couple years ago that signing the Kyoto Protocol would harm its economy. He then turned around and told the U.S. Congress, via the Anti-Environmental Global Climate Coalition, to take no action on the Kyoto Protocol until countries like India and China do. Chevron is a U.S. company that has admitted to Congressman Dennis Kucinich that it provided the helicopters and boats on two separate occasions in 1998 and 1999 to transport Nigerian troops who shot and killed unarmed demonstrators. The demonstrators were demanding clean air, clean water, their basic rights. This project, this Chad Cameroon pipeline project, financed by the World Bank, threatens to create another Niger Delta nightmare in Chad and Cameroon. But it's moving forward despite some of the most vocal criticisms and protests ever heard about a project from civil society groups around the world. Among the critics were a group of Harvard Law School students who critiqued the World Bank's proposed revenue sharing agreement for the Chad Cameroon pipeline as naive and unworkable. The World Bank, in response, sent two of its staffers up to Cambridge to meet with the head of the Harvard Law School. They demanded that the professor in charge of this class of students be fired. I can't remember the professor's name. I'll get back to you on that. The second example I'd like to share with you involves coal mining in eastern India. Until recently, India was the top recipient of World Bank development dollars. China now is. And coal, the bank's number one investment in India. The bank justifies expanded coal mining in India as not only good for the economy, but also as good for the environment, if the bank's involved. The World Bank is financing 25 mines out of 400 new open-cast coal mines in eastern India. The environmental devastation in the vicinity of these mines is total. These regions of India contain many of the last remaining wild tigers on Earth, as well as other endangered species, including the Asiatic elephant. The forests are unique because they are small, they are still connected by fragile but working corridors that allow large mammals like tigers the migration range they need. The planned mines will cut off the corridors, reducing the forest to islands surrounded by human activity. The stranded tiger populations of these inside these forest islands will die out. But it's not just endangered species we're talking about. It's also endangered indigenous cultures in the region. To make way for the mines, entire villages of tribal people have been forcibly evicted and resettled under inhumane conditions. Whereas once they had land, now they have none, and no jobs are offered to most of the oustees. When the coal and the money run out, vast areas of the region will be laid waste, devoid of its indigenous communities and wildlife, and all too soon of its short-lived mining economy. When we've